This is Radio EcoShock with Alex Smith.
I worry, how will we cope with the coming bottleneck when the economy crashes along with climate disruption? Are you ready inside?
Radio EcoShock.
Our next guest, Carolyn Baker, returns to Radio EcoShock. Carolyn is the author of many books, including Collapsing Consciously, Sacred Demise, and now a brand new look called Love in the Age of Ecological Apocalypse, The Relationships We Need to Thrive. That's just out. She's been a former psychotherapist and currently offers life coaching. Carolyn and I share news stories, although I get a lot more than I give, being a subscriber to her amazing daily news service. We're kind of online friends, but we don't agree about everything. Here's the thing. I think humans are in for some terrible shocks in the future. We are badly prepared, mentally and emotionally, to handle what is coming. Carolyn has some really useful inside tech to help us deal, and we're going to need it. Carolyn Baker, welcome back to Radio EcoShock.
Oh, thank you, Alex. It's good to be back. I appreciate being here.
Now, I suppose it's not polite for friends to start with criticism, but I do want my listeners to know that I don't agree that humans will go extinct this century. Can we still have a useful dialogue?
Absolutely, because there are so many unknowns. None of us knows anything with certainty about the future. If we look at science, it's not a pretty picture, and extinction looks pretty realistic. On the other hand, we don't know for sure, and we don't know when exactly that's going to play out or how. So I think we can have a great conversation on just having divergent views of that.
Well, we certainly both agree that humans are approaching some kind of awful bottleneck due to multiple causes. We could include the impacts of climate change, the economy, maybe a new plague, and I shouldn't even laugh about that after Ebola. It's a terrible thing. Energy, food supply problems, and you talk about all that as well, don't you?
Absolutely, in all of my books, yes.
And I was on your site. I was looking through the video page and was surprised and also not surprised to find your interview with preparedness guru Chris Martinson. In my view, Chris probably has a lot of male listeners, some of them preppers with extra gold, food, and guns in the basement. But maybe they need you most. Do you know what I mean?
Well, a lot of people want to focus only on the economic aspects of this. I have a lot of clients in life coaching who come to me, and they've just awakened to all of these things, and they're really into preparing, you know, logistically preparing. And some people sit at their computers, and they strategize, you know, well, climate change is going to be bad here, but not there. Maybe I should move to there. And how do I get all of my financial ducks in a row? Because the collapse of the economy is going to happen at a certain time in a certain way. And boy, I'm going to be prepared. And those things are wonderful. You know, we really need to be aware of these possibilities, but to keep in mind that they're only possibilities. Just like our conversation about near-term extinction. I think it's a good possibility, but it is a possibility. And so what I think is extremely important, whether we're talking about near-term extinction or we're talking about economic collapse or whatever, is we need to have the emotional and spiritual tools to help us live and live well. And I don't mean financially well, but emotionally and spiritually well in terms of our connections with each other and the Earth community in order to navigate whatever is in front of us.
I don't have your training, but it's my observation, Carolyn, that millions of Western people have become disengaged from fundamental human feelings. They experience emotions through characters on TV or in the movies and tend to laugh or cry on cue along with the soundtrack. Am I far off on that?
No, I think you're absolutely right. And many people that I respect, my friend Clinton Callahan, who writes about the next culture, and many folks who are looking at the realities of our predicament are saying that, and I don't want to say the whole human species, but certainly the inhabitants of industrial civilization are, for the most part, not mature. And we need to grow up. I talk about it's Collapsing Consciously. I have a couple of chapters in there on the culture of 2-year-olds and how do we grow up. And part of, I believe, the reason for this awful cataclysm that we're facing is to be a teaching moment, to teach us what it really means to be human, what it really means to connect with each other, what it really means to fall back in love with the earth again, what it really means to find meaning and purpose for our lives.
So let's say we have an economic crash and money becomes almost worthless, jobs disappear, and for some people that's happening right now, but if we had a major depression, millions of people may find their emotions are left back in the very childlike state you just described. We didn't get the opportunity to feel real grief from real life. Your thoughts on that?
Yes, that's absolutely true. And one of the things that I am focusing on now, Alex, it's really kind of the high point of my work, is I'm focusing on providing a safe and supportive container for people to feel their grief. We are, all of us in industrial civilization, are carrying mountains of grief. Grief about personal losses and grief about the planet, whether we're aware of it or not. And so, you know, I'm offering grief weekend workshops. There's going to be one coming up in June in Providence, Rhode Island, a whole weekend where we have an opportunity in a safe and supportive place to really get into our grief. And I see grief as a doorway to consciously experiencing all of our emotions in a mature and appropriate way.
And some people will sneer at what you're doing and at grief. Are we just protecting ourselves?
Well, you know, we have thousands of engraved messages in this culture not to get near our grief. And so when people sneer about this, what I know is that they're scared. What I know is that they are a product of a culture that says grief is weak, grief is silly, it's unnecessary, you know, man up, woman up, you know, start doing, take action instead of grieving. And taking action and doing are very important, but not without the grieving process.
Well, it just seems obvious that an event or a period where millions of people will die is coming, possibly this decade, certainly during the next, and I don't know if it'll be famine or just too many reasons why our population is unsustainable. What happens to the survivors, especially if they witness it all on TV, as we're already doing with places like Vanuatu that was wiped out by a great storm and other places that are in trouble already?
Well, this is what I write about in my books. I started writing about it in Sacred Demise, and then I got much more into that very thing in Navigating the Coming Chaos. But absolutely, we're going to all be experiencing some kind of PTSD just by watching these things and feeling all that's going on around us is chaos. It will be very, very distressing, and that is precisely why we need the emotional tools to help us navigate this, and we need support from each other. We need connection with each other. Those are two things that I think we absolutely must have in order to get through this intact.
Yeah, just think of the lasting emotional scar left by the 5 million human-caused deaths in the Holocaust during World War II. And now we picture millions of people dying due to our wasteful lifestyles, burning carbon, overusing pesticides and antibiotics, and filling the ocean with plastic. And I'm so glad you raised PTSD, because that's exactly what I'm thinking. It could come on a big social scale, and I wonder what that would look like, a society that's experienced PTSD.
Well, we did here in the United States actually experience some of that after 9/11. We were terribly in shock. We were terribly traumatized. And, you know, what was really positive in all of that is that for a few days, there was mourning. There was deep introspection. There were all these memorials that were created. There was grieving. There was people staying home with their families and coming together with each other. And then George W. Bush told us to go shopping. And right away, the United States says, we've got to invade Afghanistan. So, you know, that grief stream was broken by people who want to do anything but grieve. But I think, you know, that watching this kind of PTSD and experiencing it, being in the middle of it, has the potential to bring that sort of positive reunion once again. among all of the terrible things that it will bring forth.
Well, the idea of the medical diagnosis of shock is partly why I called this program Radio EcoShock. I think people will go into a state of shock as the environment unravels from the stresses we've created. Can you picture that?
Well, absolutely. And I love it that you have shock in your title, because we need to be shocked. You know, my friend Andrew Harvey says that we're living in Coca-Coma. You know, we're in this coma from the corporate world, from the media, from all of the denial that we're steeped in every single day, that life is just wonderful. And, you know, we're, the United States especially, we're an exceptional country. We have nothing to worry about. You know, the big mantra is, it'll get back to normal. It always does. And so there's this numbness and this delusion and this just complete oblivion to what's actually going on. So, yes, we need to be shocked in many, many ways.
And this is Radio EcoShock. I'm Alex Smith. My guest is Carolyn Baker, author of the new book, Love in the Age of Ecological Apocalypse. There is another possibility, and that is the direction you take. We could learn to grieve and survive. How can grief help us get through these things?
Well, in many indigenous cultures, and I am going to answer your question here, but I want to mention that in many indigenous cultures, grief is really honored and respected. And one culture that I'm specifically familiar with about this is the Dagara tribe of West Africa, where they have grieving rituals all the time. In fact, they have a funeral once a week, even if nobody dies, because they understand that grief that is not expressed, that is not felt, that is not shared with the community is toxic to the community. And so what happens is, as we grieve and as we get support from each other to do that, many, many things that could become toxic and become divisive in the community are cleansed, are healed, and people really deeply connect around the grieving process.
I guess a key question for me and for our listeners will be, how will we stop grieving and what follows next?
Well, that's a concern that a lot of people have. Because we're so afraid of grieving, we think that if we go into it, we'll never stop. And, you know, we'll end up being clinically depressed, and then we'll want to kill ourselves, and on and on and on. The truth is, if we don't grieve, that is when we are likely to get depressed. Because, as my friend Francis Weller says, depression is often unmetabolized grief. And so I see grief as a doorway to wholeness. You know, we grieve for a while, and then the body just naturally stops, and it stands back, and it takes a break, and then we grieve some more, and this process goes on. And in the grieving workshops, ceremonies that I do, we follow the whole thing up with a time of joy and celebration. Because when you release all this toxicity, the body is much lighter, and then you're much more available emotionally to experience the other emotions. And joy just naturally follows. You know, William Blake said, the deeper the sorrow, the greater the joy. And so after we finish the grieving piece, then we go into celebration, we go into connecting with each other, we go into gratitude, sharing poems, sharing songs, laughing, and having a really good time. So going into grief does not mean that we're going to get stuck there.
And your new book takes yet another direction. It's about love and about relationships. And I know you, this isn't new for you. You've been counseling people, especially, as you say, those newly aware of the coming challenges. You've been doing that for some time. Does your book build on those experiences?
Yes, it absolutely does. As a matter of fact, the first chapter deals with what many people come to me initially about to discuss, which is living with a reluctant partner, perhaps a partner or a family member even, who just doesn't want to hear about the collapse of industrial civilization and all these other things. And so the person comes to me and says, I just, you know, can't share anything with this person. They don't want to hear it. This is such a huge part of my life. What am I going to do? And so chapter one gives some of the tools that I use in workshops and in coaching people as to how to deal with loving, living, and preparing with a reluctant partner. And then in the second chapter, I start talking about children and raising children in this planetary predicament. And I have a wonderful appendix at the end of the book by a woman named Amanda Whitman in Vermont that has a three-part article series on raising kids for a resilient future. And then chapter three, I go into talking about relating with family, friends, and community. Some very specific tools are given in the book.
Do you think it's harder to find friends and lovers now as the media and the economy encourage us to sit in the silos of our office and then on the couch in front of the TV?
Well, yes and no. We are profoundly isolated, but there's also a huge push in this culture to be with somebody. And, you know, not to be introspective. In our isolation, we're not doing inner work. We're just like staring at a computer screen or distracting. But there's the other side, too, the messages that we get in this culture to be with somebody, you know, that, and it's wonderful if we can be in a partnership that is supportive, where we agree on things and where we're working together for the well-being of ourselves and the world. But I think there's too much relationship addiction in this culture that doesn't allow us to find out who we really are.
Good point. Now, I know you lost a friend and in the process learned more about the hospice experience. How does that apply to all of us in this world we live in?
Well, I don't think anyone needs to accept the notion of near-term extinction to understand that we are living in a hospice situation because so much of our planet is dying. And as we see the increase in environmental illnesses, we're going to, I think, and already are, starting to see a lot of death and a lot of long-term illness. Cancer is now epidemic. So we're living in a time of really being, I think, in planetary hospice. But as I say in many places, hospice is not the worst place we could be. In fact, some people say it's been the best experience of their lives because it can give us, especially if we have a hospice attitude toward all of this, it can give us an opportunity to deeply reflect, on who we are and what our lives mean. It's a time where we can connect with others and really experience deep level connection with people, a time to fall deeply in love with the earth, a time to serve and give as we have never given before, a time to love as we have never loved before, and maybe a time to make amends to people that we've harmed. So, you know, hospice, I think, is just a tremendously heightened awareness about what's important. And we shouldn't get all hung up on, oh, that means we're all going to die. Well, yeah, we all are going to die, and we're dying as we speak. So let's deal with it like grown-ups.
I'm always interested, Carolyn, in how aware people use the media to get their message out. Tell us about the changes in your radio show, The Lifeboat Hour.
Well, it's interesting you should ask. We experienced a bit of collapse with the Progressive Radio Network. They had a horrible effect of a winter storm a few months ago, and the building they were in, all of the pipes burst, and things were destroyed by water, and they had to move to another building. So they're just now getting settled in their new building. I was invited to do some shows with Global Collapse Radio, and the following day after I did the second show, that station collapsed because the two people that were facilitating the show split up. They were partners, and they split up, so they dismantled the radio station. And now I'm back at Progressive Radio Network, and I'm very happy to say that starting this Friday, March 27th, at 2 p.m. Eastern Time, we're going to have the Lifeboat Hour coming back to life in a live show where we're taking callers.
Great. I think the live shows are really exciting when you do them. So how do people find you on the web or on Facebook, and what should they expect when they do find you?
Well, they can find me at my website, which is www.carolynbaker.net. And they can find me, of course, on Facebook, I have a couple of pages on Facebook. I have my regular page. And then I have another page that we just started in anticipation of the grief weekend that we're doing in June. And I really want people to go to my Facebook page and look at that weekend workshop page, which is called The Gifts of Grief, Grief as Sacred Work.
Is there anything else you would like to talk about or a message you would like to leave with our listeners?
Well, I want to really encourage people to read my book, Love in the Age of Ecological Apocalypse, because it covers so much material. It covers 16 different kinds of relationships that we need to cultivate in order to thrive and live passionately in this time of planetary hospice.
And you always mix so many other sources and quotes in your work that I think it's almost like a doorway where people can walk out in a lot of different directions. So I always appreciate that in your work. Our guest is a historian. She's an author. She's a life counselor and speaker, Carolyn Baker from carolynbaker.net. She calls it speaking truth to power, and she certainly does. You may disagree with a few things, but friends, I predict you will someday need what she teaches. We all will. Thank you so much for talking with us, Carolyn.
Thank you for having me, Alex.
I'm Alex Smith for Radio EcoShock. Find links for today's program and my weekly show blog at ecoshock.info.
You're listening to EcoShock Radio for the world.
I'm Alex Smith. Get it all at our website, ecoshock.org.